On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, this week, although a lot of us have been distracted by concerns around Seamus Wolfe or perhaps some events at RTE, there has been another unfortunate twist in an unfortunately long-running saga, and that concerns those who have fallen victim to the cervical check scandal, because this week, talks between the 221 group and the government broke down. They had been in discussions around some of their concerns surrounding the operation of the cervical check tribunal, which is already legally underway but has not yet begun hearing any cases. Vicky Phelan is a member of the 221 Plus Executive Committee. She's with us on the line now. Vicky, before we just talk about the events of this week, it's obviously been a very difficult time for everyone. Just how are you this weather?
I'm okay, Gavin. I was very sick about 2 weeks ago. So thankfully, by the time this all happened now in the last week, I'm back to full health. But obviously, look, my cancer is starting to grow back. So unfortunately, this is one of the reasons I've been so passionate about this, Gavin, is because, this cancer, when it recurs, it's almost always fatal. So, it is something that I believe the government should be providing for. So that's one of the reasons I got involved with campaigning for a tribunal that's fit for purpose, because, women are suffering serious consequences as a result of this cancer.
Sure. Well, glad to hear that you're slightly back in the mend this weather, at least anyway. Can you talk us through the interactions that you and the others in the 221 Plus group have had with the Department of Health and with Minister Stephen Donnelly in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so we literally contacted him as soon as he was appointed as Minister for Health. Literally, we had a letter on his desk within 2 days of the appointment looking for a meeting. Now, it took almost 2 months to get a meeting at that stage. And obviously, we understand that we're in the middle of a COVID pandemic. But at the same time, given that the tribunal was ready to be established at that stage, we thought it was important to meet him. So we got our first meeting, which didn't happen until the 2nd of September. And really, since the 2nd of September, we've had quite a number of meetings on Zoom at that point, over and back. And there have been, a lot of exchanges of letters, some of them quite long and quite technical, because a lot of the issues that we have are legal issues. So obviously, we've had to get advice on this. Mm. And the minister has obviously gotten advice from the AG. So there has been a lot of protracted kind of negotiations since we started talking to the minister in September.
You and the others in the 221 Plus group were very supportive originally of there being a cervical check tribunal set up to save you having to go through what the likes of yourself and the likes of Ruth Morrissey had to do and go through the courts in such an arduous way. Clearly, at some point, you have developed some concerns around that tribunal which haven't been addressed. What are they?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Gavin, if the tribunal had been established when it was supposed to be established, we wouldn't be having these issues or these arguments. Because, it would already be established. But the problem is that the landscape has changed fundamentally since the tribunal was conceived back in June 2019. So the Morrissey case, the Supreme Court appeal in that in March 2020, and the subsequent Carrick case, which settled in September, have set a new baseline for the tribunal, which the tribunal was not really, recognising. And then, the inexcusable delays really of more than 2 years in establishing the tribunal have meant that, many of our members are at the very least serious risk of being thrown out of either High Court or the tribunal due to the statute of limitations issues. So, if the tribunal had been established, shortly after it was set up in June 2019, we wouldn't be having these issues, Gavin. And that's the whole point. I'd hate people to think that, we're just arguing for the sake of arguing. We're not. The landscape has fundamentally changed because of rulings in two significant cases.
Sure, and I'll come back to the statute of limitations because it is quite technical, but I'll try and get my head around it in just a moment. But firstly, you mentioned the outcome of those two other cases, Ruth Morrissey's case, Bullingham. Is that to do then with the standard of what is acceptable or the margin of error, which is considered to be appropriate for the reading of a smear test, or how exactly does that affect the work of the tribunal?
No, it's actually to do with the labs. So, up to now, we've been told that there was no real alternative to the High Court because negligence still has to be proven. Now, negligence still has to be proven regardless, but with Morrissey, what Morrissey established was the Supreme Court ruled that the HSE or the state has a non-delegable duty to users of the cervical check programme. So what that meant up to that point, so say, for example, in my case, I had to sue the HSE plus the lab that misread my smear. Mm. in Morrissey, what happened was the judge decided that the HSE, you know, who had been hiding behind the labs, to be quite honest, up to that point, you know, were now brought out into the open, and they could now be sued as the sole defendant. But labs obviously still has to be joined as third parties in order for cross-examination to take place, and for them to, you know, to obviously make their arguments in cases where, you know, there may not be negligence. And this is the point, Gavin. There are a number of women within the 221 group who don't have negligence to prove, you know, where the margin of error was so small that, you know, they won't be taking a big court case, and, you know, the non-disclosure amount is all that they're entitled to.
Yeah, but that is, it's not really subjective, because I suppose in instances like your own case, where in fact it wasn't just abnormalities, where there was outright cancer there, and it wasn't a case of negligible or anything being misread, it wasn't subjective, it was just black and white misread that way.
Absolutely. So what we have been arguing is that now that that has been established in Morrissey, that the tribunal needs to follow that precedent that has been set, that women now who want to go and take a case to the tribunal only have to sue the HSE and not join all these labs. Now, the labs can be joined as third parties. We accept that. And we have no issue with that. But it means then that women are only literally suing one defendant.
So does that mean then that if the tribunal... Sorry to interrupt you, Vicky. Does that mean then that although the tribunal was supposed to be a slightly less adversarial or a quicker way for women to get some sort of redress or compensation, that in fact it may now be easier in some circumstances for them to go to court rather than use this tribunal itself?
Well, this is the thing, Gavin. There's at the moment, there's actually no difference between a woman taking a case. There's no advantage to taking a case to the tribunal over the High Court. The only advantage, really, for women taking a case to the tribunal at the moment is it may be quicker. So, say, unless at the moment, as you can see in the court, we've had another case in the last week of another terminally ill, very young woman, 32, who's taking a case. So at the moment, the only cases that are being heard in the High Court are case management type cases where women are terminally ill. So anyone like Stephen Teague, for example, who's lost his wife, and Lorraine Walsh, you know, their cases are not going to be heard for probably at least 2 or 3 years, because there is a backlog, and the cases that are being heard that are prioritised are terminally ill women. So if the tribunal was established, it would facilitate people like that who are not terminally ill to go ahead and take their cases and to be heard sooner than 2 or 3 years' time. So we accept that, and that's why we did support the tribunal all along, because it would facilitate people who are not in a terminally ill position. But at the moment, there is no advantage over the High Court, and that's what we were trying to establish. Now, in fairness to the Minister, one of the things that he did come back with, but we had to argue for this now, Gavin, that's the point. We've had to argue for every little point that we've tried to get, is that, you know, we've gotten a letter now from the State Claims Agency confirming that if a woman is to take a case before the tribunal, that they will not join the labs as defendants, that they will only join them as third parties. So that is one win that we did get, in fairness to the Minister.
You've touched on there the other issue, which is the statute of limitations. Can you explain to us exactly where that kicks in? Is this to do with the more recent audit, which might determine whether, in fact, someone's slide was misread in the first place?
No, absolutely not. What this relates to is, so if you look at, this all started with my case. So my case was settled at the end of April 2018. And subsequently then, all of the women in the original 221 plus group would have been notified. So the HSE went off and identified, 221 women and families who were in a similar situation to me, where this audit had shown a difference in a reading of a slide. So they contacted all of these women and families. And all of those initial contacts, and most of them would have had sit-down meetings with the gynecologist or the consultant, and most of those meetings would have taken place by the end of May 2018. And the statute of limitations, the current situation is that the statute of limitations is 2 years. Now, it is going to increase to 3 years, but that won't happen until next year. But at the moment, the statute of limitations is 2 years. So what that means is any of those women in the 221 plus group who are notified of harm, so basically once you're notified of harm done, the clock starts ticking as soon as that meeting takes place. So we reckon that most of the women in the group would have been notified by the end of May 2018. So their statute of limitations, they were statute barred by May 2020. And this is our huge issue with this. Now, in fairness, most of the women in the 221 plus group, a vast majority of them have already issued proceedings, because we could see that this was happening. Yeah. We could see that the tribunal was not going to be established before the statute issue kind of hit around mid mid-May. So we notified all of our members back in March and April. We started contacting everybody because a lot of people wouldn't know this stuff, Gavin. Do you know what I mean?
And they would have just assumed the tribunal would come along eventually and that they'd be able to make their case through that. So I suppose then the concern is that a lot of the members of the 221 group who weren't able to act in time might have thought the tribunal would eventually get going and they'd be able to pursue their case through there and have now discovered that, in fact, the legal option, if they wanted it, the High Court option, is completely closed to them.
Exactly. And that's the issue. I mean, that is one of the reasons we've been arguing for the statute to be extended for that small group of women, because there were some people who, in good faith, you know, were waiting for this tribunal to be established by the government, who had promised that it would be ready. And they didn't want to go down the High Court route because they had been told consistently by the government publicly that this was going to be a less adversarial route. So they were holding out for this option. And that's why we have been arguing with the minister to, you know, amend the statute of limitations for this small group of people who have been holding out for a tribunal in good faith so that they would be able to take a case.
And what has the government told you whenever you raised that concern? What did the government say back to you about that?
We've been told that it's not possible to meet the requested adjustment. They said that it's not possible to amend the statute of limitations, even though we've had legal advice to say that actually, you know, the statute of limitations is amended regularly. And in fact, the actual tribunal act itself amends the statute of limitations in one instance by extending the time a person has to initiate High Court proceedings where an application is rejected by the HSE or a LAB. So, for example, okay, if somebody applies to the tribunal, all parties have to consent to going to that tribunal because, you know, some labs might say, well, no, I want to take my chances in the High Court. So there has to be consent by all parties to go down the tribunal route. So the Tribunal Act actually had to amend the statute of limitations where somebody, you know, where a woman takes a case and the HSE, for example, or a lab doesn't consent to their tribunal, you know, that time has to be added on to allow that person then to take proceedings to the High Court. So the statute of limitations has already been amended. So, you know, we don't buy the option or that argument that it cannot be amended for a very small number of people, again, through no fault of their own, who have been waiting for the tribunal.
Is there an issue that if the state was to amend the statute of limitations there, that it could wreak some havoc with the indemnity that the state has passed on, because it could be seen as actively taking a side by trying to facilitate claims rather than being a kind of an honest broker in the middle?
Yeah, and that's what we've been told, that they're, you know, we've always been threatened with this, you know, thing about the labs pulling out, you know, and that's what the worry has always been from the state. But I mean, I suppose we kind of argue, well, you know, the state has now been found to have a non-delegable duty to all of the women who use the cervical check programme. You know, we would argue that for this small number of cases, you know, take the hit, because most of the claims that are being taken, obviously the indemnity against the labs is paying out for all the settlements. So if there's a small number of cases where, you know, they have to take the hit and the labs are not going to participate, the government and the state should really be taking that hit, because it is their fault that this tribunal has taken so long to establish.
It does all seem very far removed from the promise that Leo Varadkar made about 2.5 years ago after your own visit to the High Court, where he said that no one else should ever have to do that. And what would happen in future is that women could sue the state and then the state would separately, you know, with the fullness of time, try to pursue the labs for those cases. It seems that we're so far removed from that now.
Well, we're not, to be honest, in most cases, in the majority of cases, because of the ruling in Morrissey, that is now what's going to happen. And because we have that letter from the State Claims Agency now, where the State Claims have said that they will not object to women just suing one defendant, the HSE, and the labs can be joined as third parties, it actually is going to happen now. But that it took Ruth Morrissey's case for that to happen, you know. But, you know, that will be the case for most of the cases going forward to the tribunal. But, you know, as I said, the issue is the small number of cases where women are statute barred. And that's why we pulled out, Gavin. That's why we, you know, exited the talks on Thursday, because the minister made it quite clear that, you know, our requests for an extension of the statute of limitations and to allow for a recurrence, you know, a recurrence is another big piece, that they're not going to meet us on those demands. You know, there's no point in talks any further as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, I know recurrence is another issue that the state probably has a slightly different take to you on, but we don't really have the time to go into it right now. Is it fair to say, Vicky, in conclusion, that if the whole ethos of the tribunal was that you could potentially get the same payout with less delay and with less adversary, that you now don't believe the tribunal is actually going to achieve that?
No, we do not believe it's going to achieve that. As I said, the only advantage that the tribunal offers over the High Court is for people who are not terminally ill, who might have their case heard sooner than 2 or 3 years. Other than that, it is as adversarial as Justice Anne Power, you know, has a little welcome video on the Cervical Czech Tribunal website, you know, disputing what the minister has said, that, you know, it is as adversarial as High Court. The only difference is that the hearings are in private and it's in a nicer room. But, you know, that really doesn't make any difference. I've been to the High Court and yes, the seats are very uncomfortable, but, you know, that really is not what this is about. This is about getting justice for women and you know, providing a tribunal that offers an alternative to the High Court, which this does not.
So finally then, Vicky, does that mean that you would be encouraging some members perhaps not to to pursue their cases through the tribunal, or where does it stand now? Do you still leave it up to each individual, or do you have a recommendation for which avenue they take?
Yeah, so what we have done is we have prepared a pack for all of the women with copies of all of the correspondence that we've had with the minister and the department and a covering letter, because a lot of this is quite difficult for some people to understand. So we've put in a fairly detailed cover letter explaining what has happened and what this means. And basically, you know, our members are our priority and most of our members will have a case. So we are encouraging them to share with their legal advisors the pack that we've provided them with to make a decision for themselves, how they now want to take their case forward. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we will have a number of members, obviously, who will take a case to the tribunal. And that's absolutely fine, Gavin. As I said, we will, you know, support our members, whatever they decide they want to do. And, you know, this will be a faster route for some people who are not in a terminally ill position and who may be in financial dire straits and who need this option. And that's absolutely fine. We are there to support our members and that's what we'll do. So, you know, we have prepared all of that information for our members. And that's what we will continue to do, is prioritise our members, which is what we have done from the outset.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. Vicky Phelan, a member of the 221 Plus Executive Committee, thanks very much for joining us.